安德烈马上知道在报告里面安德烈的这些力量
Today, on this very special occasion, where Buddha conquered many wrong ways of thinking through miraculous computations, and the followers of the Buddha. Therefore, remember this occasion, and Tsongkhapa has established this great prayer festival. And of course, due to what has happened in Tibet, there was big interruption for continuing the great prayer festival, but in exile, we have been doing this for the last many years, and this year we are also celebrating the founding of the Tibetan Dalai Lama government. At the same time, in the world in general, in many places we do see conflict and unfortunate happenings around, and particularly in the case of Iraq. Now, to borrow a Buddhist term, now Buddhist logical term, all the necessary causes and factors for war, it seems, is now completed, collected. And they have already amassed all this huge army and arms and ammunition. And because of the strong destructive power, countless sentient beings, including of course human beings and then birds and animals, they will all suffer. So that's why we have recited this prayer, Aryabhadra prayer, and also the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. And during the Great Prayer Festival, we have also this practice of reading the life story of the Buddha. And then the 13th Dalai Lama, or the previous Dalai Lama, also used to read the teachings of the Kadamba masters. So because of 360 years of founding of the Tibetan government, as has been requested by the Kashyap, in addition to the reading of the life story of the Buddha, the teachings from Kadamba masters was also explained during the last few days. And with regard to our practice, it is important, as usual, to recollect that we are fortunate to be born as a human being, and to be born particularly in a place where we can do Dharma practice, and we have contact and access to great spiritual teachers and masters. And right from the childhood, we are fortunate to be able to take refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And therefore, those of us who are born in Tibet, and similarly those people who are who live in the Himalayan regions, we all follow the same Buddhist tradition. And our object of faith and devotion is Buddha Shakyamuni, who visited this world, or who came into this world 2,500 years back. Buddha's teaching is something that you can examine and find the truth of the teaching by yourself. And the process of teaching is to transform and discipline the mind which is not disciplined, and then gradually achieve enlightenment. and in order to achieve such a state of enlightenment and to bring about such a state of mental transformation, it is not enough simply to have some kind of mental devotion, but what is important is to develop genuine insight and wisdom based on logical analysis and understanding. So therefore it is important to develop some kind of discriminative awareness, and therefore, as I said, in Buddhist practice it is not enough just to have faith, but your faith and devotion must be accompanied by wisdom. And therefore it is important to understand the teaching of the Buddha and then reflect and contemplate on the teaching, on the meaning. And therefore it is important to study the teaching of the Buddha. And through study, once you understand the teaching of the Buddha, then it will be very helpful. And today, based on scientific studies and experiments, in terms of understanding external material objects like sati particles, and similarly the formation of the human physical body, like the system and formation of the brain and the nerves, and there is a detailed presentation about all these physical aspects and material aspects. And still, even though there is a great understanding about the physical objects and matters, but from science still it is difficult to pinpoint what are the subtle causes of all these. And of course we can talk about an empty state where none of the universe was existent, and then we can explain that from that empty state the universe came into being and so forth. But still, if you try to explain the main causes of the formation and disintegration of the universe, it will be difficult to explain unless you are able to develop proper understanding of the process and function of the mind. And if you think about the human mind, the realms of human consciousness, then you will find different aspects of the mind. We have different feelings, different experiences of happiness, suffering, and so on. So with regard to a proper presentation of the function of the mind, and still in the rest of the world, particularly in the material field, in the scientific field, still it is difficult to explain the entire process of function of the mind. But in the Buddhist tradition, we speak about the proper use of mind, and there is a proper study of the mind in many of the ancient Indian texts, and particularly in the Buddhist philosophy, there is a very detailed explanation of the mind, particularly the faulty kinds of mind, and how these mental shortcomings and faults can be corrected, rectified. And since there is such a detailed explanation about the process and function of the mind, therefore today there is a greater interest in Buddhism about the functionings of the mind. So therefore what is important for us is, on the one hand, to know the detailed explanation made in science with regard to material objects, physical objects, and so on. And then also you should understand the Buddhist explanation. So it is in this way that you can supplement from each other's knowledges, and it is in this way that you can really enhance and strengthen your mind, your knowledge. And the purpose of all this study is to come to the conclusion that there will be happiness if you have a disciplined mind, and there will be no happiness if your mind is not disciplined. And therefore, in Buddhism, there is a technique about how to discipline and transform the mind. And it also explains the possibilities of achieving nirvana, achieving enlightenment, and what are the process to achieve such a state of enlightenment through using the mind itself, what are the practices, on the side of the masses, like development of loving kindness, compassion, and so on, and what are the process of developing the wisdom. So based on knowledge, based on understanding, if you know the reasons of the teaching, then you will be able to develop a faith which is based on knowledge and reason. And without knowledge, if you simply embrace a particular teaching, including Buddhism, because your forefathers have been following it, and if you follow it as a custom, as a habit, then that is not profound. Because later on, if you encounter a new situation, new study, new religion, then again you will follow it and run towards it. On the other hand, if your understanding is based on proper knowledge, proper reason, then even if you encounter some other interpretations, you will be able to, on the one hand, appreciate it if it is a reasonable explanation, and if it is an explanation which is not correct, then you will also be able to pinpoint the faults of such explanation. And unless you use your own intelligence and use reason, it will be difficult to develop genuine conviction. You will then be following a particular religious tradition, simply citing and following some quotations, or you will be following it as a tradition, as a custom, and that kind of practice will not be helpful in transforming your mind. So therefore, if you follow on the one hand explanation of the scientific findings and on the other hand explanation found in Buddhism, then I think we will be able to go into much deeper states of reality. And in the past in Tibet, among the majority of the people, particularly the lay people, there is not a healthy tradition of showing interest in studies, and people almost give the impression as if studies are responsibilities of monks in the monasteries. And even in many monasteries, they concentrate more on ritualistic practices rather than studying and understanding the text. So therefore, there is not much opportunity for the masses to actually study and understand the teaching of the Buddha. So this is a kind of lapse that we had experienced for many generations. And it is because of such lapses we can today, if we see it and reflect back, we can clearly understand the drawbacks and setbacks that we had suffered. So it is now time to reflect back and set right those mistakes, those lapses that we had experienced in the past. And what is therefore important is to restore the degenerations, shortcomings that we had experienced. And therefore it is important that among the masses there should be greater interest, and they should involve in study. And also within Buddhism, when we talk about Buddhist practice, we should understand probably in two ways. One is to see the Buddhist philosophy, and another is Buddhist religious practice. Now, when we talk about the Buddhist religious practice or religious aspect, then it is something that should be practiced by a Buddhist, practitioner. It may not be so relevant to a non-Buddhist practitioner. Of course, they are here and there. There may be some common kind of practices which they can embrace, like some of my Christian practitioners and friends have been adopting some Buddhist meditation practices, and they also have been adopting some practices like patience and so on. And apart from that, when we talk about the Buddhist religious practice, then it is basically the business of the Buddhists and not the non-Buddhists. So what is important is to follow and embrace a religion which is suitable to one's own mental inclination and disposition. But on the second level, when we talk about the Buddhist philosophy, then this is something that can be practiced by everybody, irrespective of whether you're a Buddhist or not. Buddhist philosophy should be understood as a subject of study, subject of knowledge. So even those who are non-believers, who are not Buddhists, even they can be benefited by studying the Buddhist philosophy as just another subject of study. And the purpose of Buddhist philosophy is the religious practice, which is then related more to the Buddhist practitioners and not to the non-Buddhist practitioners. Now, when we reflect on the Buddhist philosophy, you will find that it is a vast, very profound and deep philosophy. And you will also find that Buddha has given wide varieties of teaching, keeping in mind the needs of varieties of people having different mental dispositions and so on. And those teachings, that's why in the Buddhist teaching we have two levels of teaching, known as the interpretative teaching and the definitive teaching. Interpretative teachings are so called because these teachings probably are not kind of suitable to the minds of certain categories of followers. But such teachings are given for temporary benefit so that they can gradually be led to the definitive meaning. And therefore, what you will find in Buddhist philosophy is that the Buddhist philosophy is an endeavor, an attempt to understand the basic law of nature, the basic reality. Because when we talk about transforming and changing and discipline in the mind, it has to be done in accordance with the basic process of the law of nature, how things function. And therefore, it is extremely important to understand and study the Buddhist philosophy. So irrespective of whether you are a layperson or an ordained sangha, depending upon your own mental capacity, your own potential, it is important to make an attempt to understand the various Buddhist philosophical systems. And the whole construction of your study should be done by first understanding the meaning of the Four Noble Truths, which are the teachings that the Buddha gave right from the beginning. And proper understanding of the Four Noble Truths can be done by understanding the meaning of the Two Truths. And with regard to the study of the Two Truths, it is important to make a comparative studies of the explanation of the Two Truths as is presented in the four Buddhist philosophical schools, four Buddhist standard systems. And when you make such a comparative study, then you will find that what is being presented in the lower Buddhist philosophy, there you will see some shortcomings, some drawbacks. When you study it from the point of view of the higher Buddhist schools of thought, and you will also be able to discover the reasons of such explanations in different schools of thought. And through such kind of study, whenever you find certain inconsistencies and internal contradictions, then you will treat those teachings as interpretative. And in this way, you will gradually be able to move to the higher, the ultimate levels of teaching. And so this kind of study is very profound and excellent, because you are not encouraged to embrace something out of blind faith, but you are really encouraged to develop a healthy attitude by finding the fact through your own analysis and experiment. And therefore, today in this gathering, we have not only monks, but we have a number of lay people, and also we have a large number of young students having fresh minds. And for you, it's really important to understand that it's really important to study. And I'm saying this because sometimes when I visit some of the Tibetan schools and ask the students what kind of dharma you study, then normally they say, yes, I do my morning prayer and I do my evening prayer. That is, just doing the prayer is of not great importance, because even recitation and repetition of prayers can be done even by parrots. If you teach the parrots properly how to recite certain prayers, they can also recite it. And prayers can be played even if you record it and play it on a tape recorder. So what is really important is right from the beginning, particularly in the case of the young children, it is important to adopt these healthy habits of finding things for yourself, using reason, logic, analysis. And it is in this way that you can develop new insight into those fields where you have no proper understanding, no proper knowledge. And also through such kind of search and inquiry, you can also remove certain misconceptions. And of course there are ample quotations found in sutras and tantras and so on. But it is not enough that these quotations are there in the text. What is important is to understand clearly the purport, the meaning of these quotations. And it is because of this, during the last few years, we have selected a number of bright monk students from various monastic institutions, and we have given them an opportunity to do some modern scientific study also. So for a Buddhist student, also it is important to understand the process of scientific study. So this kind of study will become an ornament rather than a hindrance and obstruction. And then of course when you make such a comparative study, both in Buddhism and both the scientific process of study, you will find that at a certain period the scientific explanation will find certain limitations, because it's more focused on external material objects rather than the internal mind. And then the essence of the Buddha's teaching is to transform and discipline the mind. And with regard to disciplining the mind, there are many processes. And the important fact is that whether you believe a religion or not, whether you accept a future life or not, what is most important and what is something that we can all appreciate is a compassionate mind, a good mind. Even if you are a non-believer, even if you are someone who is anti-religious, even you can appreciate the need to have a kind mind, a compassionate mind. This is so because all of us are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And what are the causes for gaining happiness and removing suffering? On the other hand, in terms of acquiring certain facilities from material objects, we are all making our best of effort. And likewise, it is important to make effort to transform one's own internal mind, because the external material facilities can provide you certain physical comforts and satisfaction, but it is really difficult to give genuine, long-lasting mental satisfaction. And that is, I think, evident to all of us. We have many people who have ample opportunities and who are wealthy and have a lot of material facilities, but who are mentally unhappy. Now, contrarily, if through one's own way of thinking, through one's own mental outlook, if there is mental equanimity and mental satisfaction, then for such a person who is mentally calm, even if these people encounter some physical hardships, they will be able to tolerate it much better. And even if they encounter a lot of physical hardships and sufferings, these physical hardships will not become a factor for disturbing the mind, and one can still remain mentally undisturbed. So if you compare the physical feeling and the mental physical feeling is less powerful, and so the mental feeling and experience can overpower the physical experiences. And it is not true vice versa. And this is something we can all know. Now, for example, if you are mentally happy, now, for example, if you have certain projects and certain objects to be actualized, and if you are mentally determined to achieve that, then in order to achieve that, you may encounter a lot of physical hardships, and it may be many years project and so forth. Still, you will be able to encounter those physical hardships because you are mentally determined. Now, on the other hand, if you're mentally not ready, not prepared, even if it's a minor physical job or hardship, you will immediately get tired and you will not be able to do that. So this clearly shows that the mental satisfaction can overpower the physical hardships. On the other hand, if you are mentally unhappy, then even if you are surrounded by best of facilities, best of food and clothes, best of relatives and so forth, you will not be able to sleep properly, and you will always be complaining. And this clearly shows that physical facilities cannot overpower mental sufferings. And this being the case, religion in general, and particularly from the Buddhist religion, the main focus is how to transform the mind. And as you will all find that in Buddhism, there is not much talk about making material development or technological development, but it's talking about mental construction. And it explains how to remove many of these mental defilements, mental unhappinesses, through developing healthy mental attitudes. So therefore, if you are someone who on the one hand has enough material facilities to cater to the physical needs, and on the other hand, if you have the right mental outlook, then you will really have a happy human life, irrespective of whether you're a believer or not, whether you believe a past or future life or not. And so then you will be a person who does not have to rely on drugs and other superficial means to have happiness. And once you are able to develop such a happy state of mind, then you will be able to produce the ripple effect, that is, a positive, healthy environment within your family, within the society, and so on. Now, for example, if you are someone who is compassionate, who is always at peace, then all of your family members will look towards you, and they will find that there is someone that they can rely upon, that they can trust, that from whom they can develop certain sense of hope and so on. And this is true not only in terms of relation among the family members, but also in terms of relation between the teacher and the students. If there is genuine mutual love and affection towards each other, then there will be peace and happiness. And there is no love and genuine affection, then even if a particular person has a lot of wealth and a lot of power, then still you will not be able to see that person as the real source of hope and expectation, and you will always have to remain with fear and suspicion. And when the family is full of love, full of affection and so on, then not only the members of the human family, but even the pets, like cats and dogs, they also will be able to enjoy that peace and happiness. And if there is such kind of peace among the individual families, then of course naturally the society will be at peace and happiness, and then because of this will not experience such terrible things which are about to happen now today in the world, like conflict, war and so on. And generally speaking, nobody likes war. What is the meaning of war? What is killing? And so by nature, it's a natural kind of feeling of human being that nobody likes destruction. It is in the blood and it is in the nature of human mind that we like something growing, something that is being produced. We do not like destruction. That's why when we see the trees bearing flowers and leaves and so on, we feel very happy. And in the winter, when the leaves shed and flowers fall, and then we do not feel very happy. We do not like it. And therefore, when we talk about war, it is destruction. We are not talking, war is not for construction. It is for destruction. And by nature, nobody likes killing each other. We do not like this. However, when we are controlled by strong attachment, hatred and so on, we just forget about the negative results. We just close our eye and then we go for war. and therefore it is not correct to blame just to one few leaders, but what is important is that when the whole society is full of people who has hated attachment and so on, then naturally we will see conflict, war and so on. And look at, even in the case of us who claim to be Buddhist practitioners, we may be wearing nice looking religious costumes and so on, but inside we have strong attachment, hatred and so on. If this being the case, then how could we expect much better from those who do not have such access to religious practice and so on? So therefore the only way is to solve such problem by gradually appreciating such qualities and developing them. And today in the world there are more than 6 billion of people, and the happiness, irrespective of we talk about all sentient beings or not, at least the sufferings and happiness that is experienced by more than 6 billion of people in the world, we are directly related to the happiness and sufferings experienced by these people. Now in order to bring peace in the world, at least you should be at peace first of all. And if you are at peace with yourself, then you can encourage others to have peace and happiness. And if you are someone who is always mentally disturbed, how can you go out and teach peace to others? So therefore, as a Buddhist practitioner, we always pray for the benefit of all sentient beings. Now if this is the case, naturally we need to pray for the peace and happiness of more than 6 billion of human beings on this planet. And then your practice should not be limited just to prayer, but try to practice in your daily life as much as possible. And if you are someone who is trying to encourage, develop peace and happiness in the minds of other people, then first of all you should look within and see what kind of qualifications you have to help others. What is the state of peace in your mind? And here now it is really important to appreciate first of all the qualities of loving kindness and compassion, which is so much emphasized and taught by the Buddha. And as and when you have loving kindness and compassion, naturally and immediately that will reduce fear and suspicion. And when you have no fear and no suspicion to others, that will help develop strong mental courage and spirit. And irrespective of how other people react to you, if from your side, if you have nothing to hide, nothing to regret, nothing to repent, and when you have strong internal confidence and determination in spirit, that will give you strong mental courage, and that will definitely reduce fear and anxiety. And when you are someone who is without much fear and anxiety, you can easily associate with other people because you have no anxiety or no fear. And then even in the case if others do not behave properly to you, still you have much chance to reflect in a different way. And you have the capacity to reflect in a different way. And it is because of this conviction and kind of sense of satisfaction that you have within your mind that you will always be at peace with yourself. You can, for example, just take the example of the animals. Now take the example of like a rabbit. If you watch a rabbit, you know, they are always very careful. They are very suspicious. Particularly if you watch the ears of the rabbit, you know, you will find that they are always suspicious and ready to jump and run because they are weak. There is no genuine satisfaction within, no confidence. Now if you look at stronger animals like tiger and elephant and so on, you will find them always kind of in a relaxed attitude because they are strong and they have confidence. So likewise, in the case of human beings also, if you have strong internal confidence, and where you see all sentient beings as your friends and relatives, and then whenever you meet another friend, you will develop strong sense of happiness because you are meeting another friend, another relative. And because of this kind of attitude, you always have strong mental courage, spirit, powerful. Now on the other hand, if you are someone who is always thinking just about yourself, who is always infested with doubts, expectations, then even if you are physically very well built, very strong, but because of this suspicion and because of thinking just about yourself, your mind is always infested with doubt and fear. So by taking this example from the size of the body in terms of the animals, you can also find out that in terms of the human mind, it plays a very important role. Now in the case of physical body, size of physical body, human beings cannot at all challenge tigers and elephants and so on. We are physically much weaker, but because of our greater human intelligence and because of greater human mind, we are able to control all these animals. And it is in this perspective that Buddha taught us to appreciate the leisure and endowment that human beings have found. So whether you are a believer or you are a non-believer, or even if you are an anti-religious person, it is important to appreciate these basic qualities. That is the need to develop love, compassion towards others. And on the other hand, if you are someone who voluntarily welcomes the afflictive emotions, and if you look towards everyone with suspicion, doubt and so forth, then in the long run you will have no happiness. And that you can clearly understand if you read the past histories of the world. And at certain point you may be very powerful and you may be able to destroy or control many people, but later on you will become an object of ridicule. And therefore we need to develop a strong sense of loving kindness, compassion and altruism, which is supported and assisted by proper insight and wisdom. And therefore in the teaching of the Buddha, compassion is the root, compassion is the foundation. And therefore we need to not only strengthen compassion and not to harm others, but we should, based on development of compassion, help others. And in this regard, development of bodhicitta is the most crucial factor. And therefore, in the case of Buddhist practitioner, and particularly Mahayana practitioner, the practice of development of altruism or bodhicitta, assisted by wisdom understanding reality, is extremely important. Now, when we talk about wisdom, there are of course different types of wisdom. Wisdom understanding different modern subjects is also kind of wisdom, but here we are primarily talking about wisdom realizing emptiness or ultimate reality. And therefore, development of these two minds, bodhicitta or altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, and wisdom understanding the way things are, these two are the most important. The view of emptiness is really like a precious gem, precious jewel, and of course the bodhicitta. And these are the qualities that all of us can develop. And of course there will be differences in terms of developing them, but we all have the capacity to develop them. For example, by nature we have this kind of self-love. By nature we have this kind of self-concern and self-love. And this natural presence of self-love clearly shows that you have the capacity to develop loving kindness and compassion. So basically, so long as you have this love for oneself, you can definitely develop love for others. And when you extend this love and compassion to all other sentient beings, and then we can actually embrace the welfare of all other sentient beings, as we always pray in the form of all mother sentient beings. So irrespective of the extent, even the tiniest insects, they also have kind of feeling of closeness to themselves and to a limited number of other insects. And similarly in the case of human beings also, we have this capacity to share love with others, but how much we will be able to share this love and how effective it will be is dependent on the the nature of your intelligence, the capacity of your intelligence, and the capacity of your overall education, and so forth. And that is why when we talk about transcending, we talk about traversing through different spatial paths, the five paths and ten grounds and so on. We are really talking about developing more and more experience, more and more education, so that we will be able to effectively help other beings. So therefore you will be able to appreciate and see that this whole process of moving gradually from step to another step and then gradually leading to enlightenment is this clearly explains that things are dependent on many factors and many forces. And this kind of gradual development of mind is in conformity with the way things are, even in the case of cultivating the field and growing certain crops. You can't plant something and reap the crop the next day. It takes time. With the passage of time, you can then gather the crops. So similarly, in the case of internal development also, it takes time. You need to gain more insight, more experience, more knowledge, more education. And then through this, not only you will be able to effectively help others, but you will also achieve gradually enlightenment. So to summarize the point, it is important to realize that the practice of bodhicitta and view of emptiness is the most important practice of the whole teaching of the Buddha. Now, in order to undertake such a practice, it is important to understand how Buddha himself had practiced in the past many lives. And if you read, therefore, many of the past life stories of the Buddha, you will find that for many countless eons, Buddha practiced, on the one hand, wisdom, realizing emptiness, and on the other hand, bodhicitta, to help other sentient beings, and to achieve enlightenment. So therefore, and relating those experiences to our own mind, we should transform our mind. So here I will read the life history of the Buddha. So this is the fifth life history of the Buddha. In one of his past life, when he was merchant. And at that time also, he was born as someone who is very honest and who has the necessary material facilities, and therefore he became a leader of a group of merchants. So he was at that time born as the son of a rich, wealthy family. So, in essence, reading the text, don't expect much translation. If something good comes up, I will be there. I So here the text primarily speaks about the need to practice giving or charity or generosity. Because it is saying that it is not only helping others, but even for yourself, practice of giving is highly important. Because by simply keep on accumulating wealth, it is not possible to achieve liberation or enlightenment. But it is by sharing the wealth, by giving the wealth, that in this very life you will be able to earn name and fame and recognition. And then as a result of practicing giving, that this will definitely leave a strong positive intent to achieve liberation and enlightenment in the future. And particularly, if you are someone who is really compassionate, who thinks about the well-being of other human beings, then how can you roll in wealth and enjoy the wealth when you see poor people and when you see suffering people all around? So therefore, wealth is something that should be distributed, that should be used to help others. And therefore, a person who is compassionate and who has material capabilities at one's disposal, then whenever they are able to obtain wealth and they become rich, they always look forward to it by thinking that now I have better opportunities of helping other people. Now, in the case of ordinary people, as we all see, that they will spend they spend day and night accumulating wealth, and finally, even if they have some wealth, when they become proud and do not share it and help others, then they will become an object of competition and object of jealousy by others. And on the other hand, then if you are someone who does not have so much craving and attachment to oneself, then you can use that well and by thinking about well-being of other people and by distributing the wealth to other people, not only will you be able to help others, but your own well-being will be achieved as a byproduct. I think this is an interesting play of the nature. On the other hand, contrary to this, if you are someone who always thinks about oneself, what will happen to me, and if you go on accumulating the wealth and always worried and concerned about it and totally forget about others' well-being, then in the long run this will lead to suffering and not happiness. So this is again a very interesting play of the nature, that if you help others you will naturally get happiness, and if you harm others you will naturally suffer.
Mm-hmm.
For such a person who is mentally contented, even if one becomes poor and loses one's own materials and wealth and so on, such a person will not get discouraged or dejected. The king of the god Indra, he praises this bodhisattva, the previous life of the Buddha, who was born as a rich merchant. He was praising this merchant, saying that I completely appreciate your internal mental contentment and weakness. So the text explains that the king of the world, he through his miraculous manifestation tried to examine the state of the mind of the merchant leader, and later on found that the merchant was not at all attached to his wealth, and then he praises him. So the next reading is from the Kadamba stories. This is about the story of the Kadamba master. The reading is from the second chapter. At a time when Jyotisha and his disciple Rome, they were staying in a place called Mahari. The Ngok Losawa does this, offers prostrations to them, and in the case of the stories, previous life stories of Ndomtemba, he requested him to explain the past life part stories of Ndomtemba. He tells Adisha that the stories of Ndomtemba that he told me before was very very useful, very effective in transforming his mind and as well as his practice. And he requested him to tell the story. After all, Adisha also praises Ngok Losa in English, saying that you are a genuine practitioner and you are a scholar in the worldly field, and also in the field of religious practice. And asking him to meditate on altruism, compassion, and so on. And here, Nodama also gives the permission to tell his life stories. Because in the very beginning, Nodama reluctant to give this permission, saying that I'm just an ordinary person, nothing interesting about my pastor life stories. The next one is Atishastra telling the stories of Dongdenba. Suddenly the whole atmosphere around them changed, and they could notice falling flowers from the sky and so on. And Ngong Losawa highly appreciated that. And the gods and the deities get highly pleased. Then make the mandala offering, and then at this particular day he said, apart from having a silver mandala, I don't have even a wooden mandala to make the mandala offering. So I missed the opportunity to go back and bring my mandala, silver mandala, to make the mandala offering. Then through this, Dongdenba said that not only is here to receive him, there are so many other human beings and gods present. So if you go out to bring the silver mandala, you are wasting your money. So let me make a mandala to myself. And then to this, Atisha said that this mandala offering by Ngog is important because he has made this request. So the mandala must be offered by Ngog Vasava. Saying this, Atisha gave his silver mandala to Ngog Vasava and asked him to make the mandala offering.
Huh?
This magistrate of Don Tamba when he was born as a king, and at that time Adisha was born as a bhikshu, and even in that lifetime the king was someone who has a great sense of respect for Avalokiteshvara, and he was totally concerned about the well-being of human beings, seeing them as his parents, and so he was in that lifestyle also requesting some teachings from Adisha, who was then a bhikshu. So at that time the king, because of a great devotion and faith, invited all the Aryas and Sanghas present around at that time, and made a lot of offerings, and these Aryas and Sanghas, which included the Bhikshu who was the manifestation of Pratishtha, they also prayed for development of incomparable compassion and other higher qualities in the mind of the king and the queen and the people in the kingdom. And then this king was so moved by the teaching and guidance of this bhikshu that he finally said, I will have no craving and attachment to any of the facilities in the kingdom, his queen, his kingdom, and he said, I will shortly devote my whole time for making offerings to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and in removing attachment to any aspects of samsara or cycle of existence, and I will continuously meditate on loving kindness and compassion, and I will see all sentient beings as my parents, and will develop no attachment to some and hatred to others, and therefore I pray that may I for many lives be able to see you, that is the bhikshu, as my parents for many lives to come. And it is in this way we met such a prayer. And that Vishnu Arya also prophesied how he will be born in a country which is like covered by darkness, and how his appearance will be like lightning a lamp in that land. And he will then become as a precious treasure of their land, and he will be known by the name Dongtan Gyalwin Jumi. And then finally the king was also advised by the Arya by saying that now since we have developed such a strong determination to leave the kingdom and go into the forest, so as you have decided, you should practice it and do not develop attachment for anything, even for a moment, and dedicate your whole time for benefiting certain beings in general, and particularly to accumulate and a merit to help your parents. And the king also apologized in front of the Bhikshu by saying that until now, because of not recognizing my parents as parents, I might have committed many negative deeds, and I wholeheartedly apologize for that and regret about that. The king was also advised and instructed by saying that if you reflect carefully, there is no one who has not acted as your parents, because we have taken countless lives, and in each life you definitely had a parent. So therefore, by abandoning the kingdom and the house, you should go retire into the forest and do not let yourself distracted by dullness, laziness, sleep, and totally dedicate your time for the benefit of all suffering parents and beings. And then he was also instructed to undertake the whole practices in relation to the practice of the six perfections, and particularly the understanding how everything is interconnected and how everything is devoid of independent inherent existence. And it is because of things depending on multiplicity of causes and factors that many things can be produced and many things can be changed. If you reflect carefully about the nature of everything, it is really like the creation of a magician. just as it is meaningless to develop strong obsession and attachment to something that is created by a magician because there is no real truth in it. So similarly, it is wrong to develop strong attachment to what we experience and feel around. Then a prophecy was also made about how Potova and Third Master the three Kadampa brothers, how they will also appear in Tibet. So in the end, telling the story, they made a lot of prayers. And as soon as hearing all these prayers, Mawasama, who requested to tell such a story, wept. And finally, Dr. Mama was saying that if you try to summarize all the qualities and teachings of the Buddha and the great masters, it is basically developing compassion and loving others. And if you are someone who has truly developed these inner qualities, then you do not have to try to make a show of yourself to others. Your radiation and light will go everywhere, and people will naturally come to you, and you will be able to help them. So this completes reading the second chapter. So this completes the reading from the life stories of the Buddha and life story of Domtenpa. And normally I help people develop bodhicitta by reciting the three line, the four line. I take the push to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and to develop enlightenment, altruism for the sake of all sentient beings. So similarly, today being a very special day, we should all here take this opportunity to develop bodhicitta. And the great qualities of the Buddha that we see and we read, and the great qualities of Dhammadhamma that we read, all these are result of practice and development of bodhicitta. And therefore, in our own case, it is highly important to meditate on bodhicitta. And as far as meditating on bodhicitta is concerned, we can all meditate on it every day. And of course, actual development of bodhicitta takes time. But through this kind of repeated meditation, and through developing a strong feeling of closeness towards bodhicitta, we can gradually develop it. And it is in this way that we can make our life meaningful. So we can say that the purpose of human life is to develop such kind of characteristics, and that's why we always pray, may I be able to develop bodhicitta which I have not developed, and further strengthen that bodhicitta that I have developed. So therefore today here we will develop bodhicitta, and to do that, in front of you imagine the actual presence of Buddha Shakyamuni, adorned with all the major and minor physical and mental signs, and similarly imagine the presence of the 17 Nalinda scholars, deity, great cities, the 16 arhats, and the great teachers of India and Tibet and so on, and similarly the great Kadamba masters, Choji, Tomtemba, Wallace Bishirap, and likewise visualize the presence of all mother sentient beings present around you. They are all similar like yourself, not wanting even the tiniest suffering, and wanting the maximum happiness. And for the benefit of all these suffering mother sentient beings, I take refuge to you, all the objects of refuge. And with that kind of wish, take refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And we should also think that just as I will also develop similar types of physical, verbal and mental qualities as is found within the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and I will work for the benefit of all sentient beings until the end of the space. So it is in this way we will develop bodhicitta. Sit in a kneeling position. If you have problem in the leg, then you don't have to do it. We have already done the seven limb practice. Here we'll repeat after me the four lines of taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and developing bodhicitta. And as you have read some of the qualities of Buddha and Dhammadhamma in the two life stories, and therefore, as is said in those life stories, from today onwards, the whole purpose of my life will be dedicated to benefit others, to be of use to others. As is said in the Bodhicharya Vasara, that I will regard myself as the four or five elements. May I be able to regard myself as the four or five elements, like the earth, the water, the fire, and the air, which is always whose purpose is to be of benefit and use to others. And in short, you should sum up the prayer by saying that as long as space remains, till that long I will remain to remove the sufferings of all sentient beings, and therefore develop a strong determination to help others. And based on that, if you make the prayer, you will definitely accumulate strong merit. Repeat this. I take refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I achieve enlightenment through the merit of my practice of giving and so on. May I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So repeat this. Chanju Pada Dhani Jabsuji. dāgī jīnsū jīvē sōnām jīyā rōla pēngyā sāngyē rōpa shō sāngyē chūdā sōjī shōnām lā chāngyū pārdu dāni jābsū jīyā dāgī jīnsū jīvē sōnām jīyā rōla pēngyā sāngyē rōpa shō Repeat this. This precious Bodhisattva mind, may I be able to develop it, which I have not developed, and those that have developed, may they prosper and never decline, as long as sentiments remain, may I to remain to remove their sufferings. Sit down, please. So this completes today's the teaching session, which is normally done during the Red Prayer Festival. May all the virtues that we have earned by listening to such teaching, may this become our cause for achieving enlightenment for the human beings. May the meaning of all the prayers of Samanta Bhadra be fulfilled. I dedicate all these virtues that I have accumulated to be able to lead a life like that of the Bodhisattva Samanta Bhadra.